We talk ESPN baseball analyst Tim Kurkdjian with us every week, sponsored by our good friends at CDTA. And Timmy Goo, how are you today?
I'm great. Everything's great.
Well, that's good, Timmy. And everything's great with the Yankees this morning. They wake up only three games out of first place. They host the Blue Jays tonight. And I guess the narrative we've been talking about all year, they finally figured out a way to win a series against a good team as they take two out of three from the Houston Astros. What did you make of the series?
Well, it was really important for the Yankees to beat up on a good team like that, because it seems like all we've been talking about for the last month is they can only beat the bad teams, which I never quite believed. But that was very impressive. And now, of course, they get the first place team in the division at home for three games. And that was, it should be a tremendous series. I got asked yesterday on Toronto radio, what team is under more pressure here? And I think it's always the team that's behind, the team that is chasing. I mean, the Yankees get swept. They're six games out of the division with 3 weeks to go. That's not going to happen. But Toronto needs to show that it's ready for a big series like this, especially on the road against a team that's playing pretty well. So can't wait. This will be the best series of a really baseball-filled weekend.
Yeah, and Timmy, there are still many that just don't believe in Toronto, right? They just don't believe that Toronto, and I've been hearing it all year, like, hey, Toronto's still in first. Toronto's got this lead. But then I hear so many say, I'm not a believer in the Toronto Blue Jays. They're going to give this up. The Yankees or the Red Sox could still win this division, and here we are.
Yes, and that certainly is possible. But frankly, Roger, I'm not a believer in any team in the American League. Complete believer. Like, I think the Tigers are going to win the division for sure. I think the Astros are going to the playoffs. I know Toronto's going to the playoffs, and the Yankees and Red Sox have a great shot at this. But it's such a parity now in the American League that I just don't see any team good enough to just run away. Like, I don't see Toronto running away, but they're better than people think now. Their starting rotation is six deep. They have your boy Jeff Hoffman at the end of the game. He's been really good. Bo Bichette's been as good a hitter as there's been in the league for the last 3 months. Vlad Guerrero's hot again, and George Springer has found his swing once again. So do not underestimate the Blue Jays, but still, if the Yankees keep swinging it the way they have lately, they can win the series and they can still win the division.
Talking with the great Tim Kurkdjian, ESPN Major League Baseball analyst, as we do every Friday, all MLB season long, right here on Big Board Sports on 104.5, the team, ESPN Radio. Timmy, I'll take you back to Wednesday night in the wild finish in Game 2 for Yankees-Astros. Devin Williams continues to be a roller coaster for this Yankees team. In postgame, he's obviously ripping the umpires. Say what you want. Yes, he did miss some calls, but as you well know, that sometimes usually doesn't dictate how a game is won or lost these days. But, Timmy, what should the Yankees and Aaron Boone do moving forward here consistently? What do you want to see them do regarding Devin Williams coming out of the bullpen?
Well, ZRA is well over 5, and we're in September. And this has been a struggle from day one for this guy. And, you know, by the August the 1st, he had given up more runs for the Yankees than he'd given up in the three previous seasons for the Brewers. I mean, this is a massive collapse by a really good pitcher. Speaking again to the beauty and the degree of difficulty of baseball. But to answer the question, I think they have to get him back out there in non-safe situations and see if he can find his stuff again. See if he can find that changeup. He struck out the side recently, and it looked really good. And then he gets in a game with a lead on the line, and he gives it up. David Bednar's going to have to close way more games now. Weaver's going to have to be really important there, and because I just don't think you can trust, at this point, Devin Williams on a championship-caliber team to get the last three out.
How do you like the starting rotation? How do you think that looks right now for the New York Yankees end of the regular season with the postseason ready to roll?
Yeah, I think it's good enough in the American League to get to the World Series. It's not great, but I don't think it's as good or as deep as Toronto's rotation. But Max Fried has made some good starts lately. Carlos Rodon has quietly won 16 games for a second straight season. Cam Schlitter has got really good stuff. I think the rotation is good enough to be a real contender the rest of the way and then be dangerous in October. But let's face it, fellas, if they're going to the World Series like last year, they're just going to have to pound you on Giancarlo Stanton, Judge, and now Grisham's got 30 home runs. He never hit more than 17 in a season. Now he's got 30. Someone needs to explain that to me. It's amazing.
Was it 30 and then 100 career home runs? Is that was that career home run number 100 last night for Grisham?
100, and it was his 30th of the season. Those numbers do not match up. They do not line up. But it's what we talk about all the time with baseball. A lot of things don't line up. That's what makes it so interesting.
All right, Timmy, let's go over to the Mets here, and you talk about pitching. I mean, their starting rotation is in shambles here a little bit, only because Kodai Senga, they're asking him to go to the minors. I don't think Shamanai is where he needs to be. How do you look at the new, and their bats are coming alive and all of that, but that's starting rotation, and I don't know what the decision is going to be from Kodai Senga today. Will he accept a demotion to go to the minor leagues?
Well, this is a fascinating situation because it's possible now that Nolan McClain and Jonah Tong are going to be, and David Peterson are going to be your three best pitchers going into the postseason. And two of them have virtually no major league experience. But I'm a big believer in going with the hot hand. I'm a big believer in taking the best stuff that you have and then hoping it works in the most pressurized situations. And both of these kids, again, small sample, but both of these kids have pitched well enough that you think, well, maybe they'll be able to handle this. I would rather put great stuff out there with no experience rather than stuff that's a bit iffy, and that's what the Mets are looking at with a bunch of other guys in the rotation. And now they called up Brandon Sprout to see what he can do. This would be fascinating also if he has the final 3 weeks that is impressive. What are they going to do then? I think this makes for a really interesting final 3 weeks of the season for the Mets.
No question. And I love it. I agree with you. Like, let these young guys do their thing. Certainly, Nolan McClain has been absolutely lights out, and Senga has not been able to figure it out. Manaea has not been able to figure it out. It's time to make that move, and it looks like that's what the Mets are doing. And also, Timmy, how many more times can you hand the ball off to Ryan Helsley in relief and watch him implode time and time again?
Yeah, this is amazing, because last year he was arguably the best, well, certainly one of the two best relief pitchers in the National League. And now, since being traded to the Mets, he can't get anybody out. The other night, he had a terrible appearance. And again, this was their thrust at the trade deadline. Let's build a back end of the bullpen that can challenge anyone, maybe even, you know, the Padres. And it simply hasn't happened. But just like the Yankees need to ride this out with Devin Williams, maybe in non-stressful situations, the Mets have to do the same thing with Helsley. He is so important to them. If they're going to get to and win the World Series, he has to be great. And the only way that's going to happen is to get him work, get him figured this out in a low-leverage situation, because he needs to be the seventh or eighth inning guy in October. Otherwise, they're not going to be the team they need to be.
Timmy, how about this Boston Red Sox team? How significant is the injury to Roman Anthony, presumably out the rest of the regular season, if not if they make the postseason, potentially in that first series too?
Yeah, Michael, this is a terrible blow for the Red Sox. Yeah. When Roman Anthony went down, he had the most hits on the team the second half of the season. He has arguably been their best player the second half of the season. And I told you guys, when I saw him in spring training, Alex Cora looked at me and he said, you could take 20 prospects and you just look at them. Just look at the presence they have. Look at their face. Look at their body. And the first guy you're going to pick is Roman Anthony. That's the guy. That's how good he was as a minor leaguer and as a prospect. And now he's that good as a big leaguer. And now he's not going to be able to play for the rest of the regular season. These young guys have added so much energy to the Red Sox, like McClain has to the Mets. And when you take out a critical guy, a middle of the order or leadoff hitter like him for the last 3 weeks, the Red Sox are going to have to do everything they can to make up for this, because this is a massive loss.
It sure is. I mean, I think the Red Sox are a playoff team and can be dangerous, but hopefully he would be ready to go in the postseason.
Yes, and again, with obliques, you're never quite sure, and that looked pretty bad to me, but maybe with 3 full weeks off, he can come back in October and be at his best, but that is asking a lot of a young player to take 3 weeks off at the most critical time of the year, come back under the most pressurized time of the year, and then tell him, all right, you're playing and you got to be great. That's a big thing to do, but that kid is so talented. He's got a chance to be really good as soon as he gets healthy.
All right, who's winning the Yankee-Blue Jays series?
All right, the Yankees are going to win this series because they're at home. They're going to win 2 out of 3. They're going to pick up a game on the Blue Jays, which they need to do. 1 game a week can get them tied by the end. But I'm telling you, fellas, do not underestimate Toronto. That starting rotation is really nasty. And with Shane Bieber going the way he is, and Max Scherzer still has 95 left, not to mention the Kevin Gausman, who's pitching tonight, that's a very dangerous team. But I still like the momentum that the Yankees have right now.
And you like the season that our Shaker grad Jeff Hoffman is having in Toronto as the closer.
Yeah, don't pay attention to that ERA, which is still a little bit elevated from a couple of really bad appearances. He is a top-flight closer in the big leagues, and that's what every team needs to have. I mean, this is what Toronto didn't have with Romano the last few years, and now they do with this guy. And if he stays as good as he's been lately, they have the ninth inning covered.
Yeah, well, and it's what the Yankees don't have. I mean, the Blue Jays have a closer in Jeff Hoffman. The Yankees really haven't figured out who can close games. Almost no matter who you put it, even Bednar last night, he wasn't great by any stretch of the imagination. That there's issues coming out of the bullpen of the Yankees.
Yeah, and again, they were supposed to have this incredible deep bullpen with 4 closers pitching the 7th inning on. Well, Luke Weaver is still, he's still got a chance to get that great changeup going because he was so good in the postseason last year, but he hasn't been quite as good, nearly as good as he was last year and last October. One of those guys is going to have to step forward and take the 9th inning. Otherwise, I don't think the Yankees are going to where they need to go.
Well, there's nobody better than Tim Kirchen, and we have him every Friday at 10:30 here on ESPN Radio in Albany. Timmy, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, and have yourself a great weekend.
Okay, fellas, you too. Talk
Take
to
care.
You too.
That is
Thanks,
the great
Timmy.
Tim Kirchen on Big Board Sports every Friday on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. All right, High School Spotlight, sponsored by Harding Mazzotti. Hurt your body? Call Harding Mazzotti, 1-800-LAW-1010. Big game, James Allen joins us, and we kick off week one, not week zero, week one. We got a week one matchups across the Capital Region tonight. Big game, good morning.
Morning, Roger.
How are you? Are you ready? Are you pumped up? Do you still get excited about the start of the high school football season?
Well, absolutely. Ready to go.
Yeah, I'm too. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a little different because I'm not going to be covering my kid every week. He's at Ithaca. But it's still – and you wrote a nice article today. Let's start there. Colony plays Penfield, and Colony had a 5-5 season last year. The best season they've had since 2017 under Greg Barrett. They have changed coaches. John LaPointe is now the head coach. He was a Barrett assistant coach. He steps in to be the head coach. And you wrote about the quarterback today, which is Stephen Thomas. He's a junior, came over from CBA last year, and made quite a difference. Is this going to be a good year for the Colony Wolfpack?
Well, it has a potential to be. It's going to be interesting to see how, some guys that are stepping into new roles. Obviously, Coach LaPointe was the offensive coordinator. He's going to remain doing that even though he's the head coach. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what some of the younger players last year that are getting the chance to move up in the pecking order and on the team. And then, they were a sixth place team out of 9 teams in Class AA last year. There's only 8 teams in Class AA this year. 4 playoff teams from last year are still going to be pretty good this year. So that's CBA, defending champions, Shen, Shaker, and Saratoga Springs. So those teams are all have high hopes to get back to the playoffs. And Colony's looking to to crack in and see if they can be one of those teams that can replace one of those four as a playoff team this year.
What do you think of Stephen Thomas at quarterback?
It's tremendous. I mean, I saw him, you know, before he left Colony last year. I mean, you know, see him obviously during the lead up to the regular season last year. He was going to be the backup, and he was the backup in the first game for CBA last year behind Archie Jones. And Steven decided he wanted to come back. He was originally Colony. He was played there until his eighth grade year, and then spent his freshman year at CBA. Was on the JV team. And was a really good player for them. And I think he just realized he wasn't probably going to get the chance to play quarterback until he was a senior, and at least on a regular basis. And with Archie Jones being back this year, so decided to go back home. And he made a tremendous impact. You know, he goes back home on a Monday last year. You know, going into week one, there was a week zero last year, and he was the fourth string quarterback. And then by the Friday, Albany gets out to a big lead, and he comes off the bench and throws for three and runs for four touchdowns, and they come back and win 49-42, and makes his presence felt, and had a great game to end the season and a crossover game against Bethlehem last year. He had five touchdown passes, so he certainly showed his ability. And you know, now it's a question of, you know, there was a pretty big disparity in terms of the top playoff teams last year, and then Niskayuna was the fifth place team. And they lost their quarterback for most of the year, Ethan Gilson. He broke his collarbone. So Colony's, you know, trying to move up, and they're going to have to be better defensively. They gave up 40 points a game last year. That's going to be a big area if you want to improve. As good as the offense has the potential to be with Stephen Thomas, the quarterback, the defense has got to be better if they want to. Challenge with some of the top teams.
Yeah, 100% right there. Now, I think they'll have plenty of offense. Yeah, how much better will they be defensively? We'll find out. They play Penfield tomorrow at the 3:00. There's a lot of non-conference games throughout the course of the weekend. But on the quarterback, and I'm going to make sure MJ gets word out. And I don't know if he's locked into this, but I'm going to lock him in. You wrote the story, and we covered him. Very briefly, but former Find the Fultonville quarterback, last name Croucher, man, he's at the prep school, and he's getting major offers from every major Division I team across the country. And you wrote about the latest; he's been offered by the University of Georgia.
Yeah, Roger. He, he played his freshman year as a 14-year-old. 2 years ago at Fonda Fultonville, and people may have forgotten already, but he was the guy that was so responsible for, was a big part of the reason why they were able to get to the state finals Class C his freshman year. They played week zero in a wild game against Schuylerville. They went back and forth, and he actually led them to a touchdown drive with another minute to go in that game. Looked like they were going to win, but Schuylerville came back and won 30-28, and 36-34, it was along those lines. It was a really good performance. And, you know, he had a great freshman year, led him to the state final, and he made the decision, it wasn't an easy decision, to leave to go to a prep school, and he plays at Cheshire Academy in Connecticut. So he's been there, and he had a great year last year. But before he left, his first offer came from Indiana. At the end of his freshman year, he got an offer from them, and then he went to a lot of camps last year. He went to the Elite 11 camp, which is basically the top 11 quarterbacks in his class to be seen. And he started going to a lot of these college camps, and the next thing you know, the offers started to pour in, and he had gotten to the point where he had gotten 18 offers, and he sort of narrowed his, he kind of put out a thing on social media, I'm narrowing my choices down to three, and then Georgia comes calling, and I imagine there's going to be more, because he's starting to play, and he's going to get the opportunity to get his name out there even more. And these aren't small schools that he's getting offers from. He's getting offers from the best, from the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, all the Power Five, five schools, and a lot of the top teams in the country are interested in him. And He is basically, he's rated, I think he's rated number 9 among the quarterbacks in his class, and some have him higher. And it looks like his name is going up, and, you know, he's got the size, and he's got the ability, and he's a great decision maker, and he really showed that as a 14-year-old, how much poise he has as a quarterback, and he's only gotten better at that in the last 2 years.
Yeah, can't wait to watch him at the next level, and who knows if there'll be a next level after that. We're kind of due to have somebody from the 5-1-8 making a big time in the National Football League. That kid at quarterback, depending on how his collegiate career goes, could be that kid from Fonda, Fultonville. I love the story. Very, very talented young man. We'll see how that plays out. All right, big game. What is the big game tonight? I know Class B has a couple of games that I have circled, and you're going to be at one of them. And as Lansingburg at Averill Park, and then I'm also interested in Glens Falls at Chalmont tonight.
Yeah, you know, Glens Falls at Chalmont. Glens Falls, the defending Class B champions. They did take some pretty significant graduation hits on their offense. And on the defense, because they're all guys that play defense as well, but their offense is unbelievable. Last year, Brody Holcomb was the starting quarterback. They have two outstanding receivers, both of them All-State performers as well, and Kellen Driscoll and Oscar Lilock. And those names might sound familiar because during the winter, those guys led the basketball team in their back-to-back undefeated seasons and Class A state championships in basketball. They got to the Section 2 title game. They won it last year. They had a comeback against Gravina. They won 20-14. And they got to the state semifinals, wound up losing. But Glens Falls still got pretty good. You know, they got a good offensive line. They got a lot of players back on that. Chase Matague is the quarterback now. And they got an outstanding linebacker from last year that's back, and Ralph Maldonado. And Chalmont is a team that, you know, if you think about success, really, since Joe Whipple's taken over that program, they've, you know, been contenders. You know, they've been in the state final a couple of times. They've been in the mix and won multiple titles. Last year wasn't they hadn't had a losing season. They were 4-5, which is very atypical of their program. They had big hopes this year. They have a lot of sophomores last year. They're now junior starters. They feel like if they can avoid the injury bug, that they can be a better team. And they're going to find out real quick, because the Class B, for the may not know the differences this year with some of the teams leaving. Two of the top teams from the classification that were playoff semifinalists last year are now playing Class C with Hoosick Falls and Tamarack, and also a Mechanicville, used to be Mechanicville, Hoosick Valley, but Hoosick Valley is now broken off. They're playing 8-man, so Mechanicville's by themselves again. They're in the Class C, but Glens Falls is defending champion, and then Averill Park is the team that won the A's last year, but they've dropped down to B. So all of the games in Class B this year are all division game, or well, there's no division. There's all league games, and it's one 10-team league, and there's only 4 playoff spots available. So every game that you play in Class B, starting with this week, are all divisional or, you know, league games, and the top 4 are going to make the playoffs. So these are 4 of the contenders for the playoffs. And Averill Park's, they took some huge graduation losses. They only have a couple of, they actually have 3 returning starters on offense and defense that are back on both sides, the same 3 kids. So they lost, you know, Jacob Fells was an outstanding player for them. He graduated. But Averill Park still has big hopes. They're moving to a different classification. They're opening up against Lansingburg, and the Knights have had a couple decent years recently. They've been, you know, a team that's sort of been like, you know, in the mix in which was the Reinford Division. There's no Reinford Division this year. There's no East Division in Class B, but they have high hopes this year. So they're, you know, going to find out. Some of these teams are also contenders. I mean, there's a couple other teams in the class that consider themselves contenders, with Ravina. Queen of Selkirk's also playing Gloversville tonight, so that's another game to keep an eye on Class B. But these are 2 very important games to start off the season, and they're both being played tonight.
There we go. Well, have a great game. I know it's a Spectrum game of the week, so have fun with that tonight. Big game, and we'll hope for some close games. We'll see how some of these teams do. I'll be over at Shaker for hashtag Rods on the Road. They've got Arlington, and that's a team from downstate. They open up there. Greg Shewer's team does tonight. And off and running we go with high school football. Big game. Always a pleasure, my friend. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you this time next week.
Sounds good, Roger. I'll talk to you next
you
week.
You got it. Thank you. Big game. Big game, James Allen from the Times Union. It's a football-filled Friday. It's the start of the NFL season, week one. It started last night with the Dallas Cowboys in Philadelphia against the Eagles, and Philadelphia figured out a way to pull out a very close game on the opening night. Freddie Coleman is with us, and he's with you every afternoon here on 104.5, the Team ESPN Radio. Freddie, how are you, my friend?
I am doing good, my brothers. How are you guys doing up in the 518 today?
Well, we're great. I'm not looking forward to a 5.5-hour drive to Dover, Delaware tomorrow for you, Albany, Delaware State. Other than that, Freddie, I'm in the right frame of mind.
Exactly.
Well, you should be in the right frame of mind because it's a football Saturday. You get a chance to have a little early CAA action involving Albany taking on Delaware State. And believe me, you get a chance to see Deshaun Jackson.
I know.
Be the head coach of Delaware State, the former Eagles terrific wide receiver. So there's no bad Saturday having a chance to be a part of that, my friend.
That's right. And Clinton Portis is his assistant. So another NFL guy.
That's pretty wild.
We'll see what you Albany could do. Yeah. Where are you headed this weekend?
This weekend I have off because at Sacred Heart last week they had an opening season victory against Stonehill, so they don't return for another home game until September 27th when they play Delaware State at home, so we get a chance to see Deshaun Jackson together in the same season.
There you go.
How about it?
All right, what'd you make of the opening game last night, and obviously just despicable act by Jalen Carter to start the whole night off last night?
Yeah, and I mean, from what I read about the report that Dak Prescott, the Cowboys quarterback, spit in his direction, and if you thought he was spitting at your football team, there's a way to handle that. You could yell across, hey, dude, what are you doing? But he decided to take it upon himself, being very selfish to say, hey, you're not going to do that to our team, and you don't know the context of what Dak Prescott was doing, and then engaging in that whole spitting act. And the NFL is not going to put up with that, and the Philadelphia Eagles are not going to put up with that kind of nonsense. And if you're Jalen Carter, I'm still trying to figure out what the end game was by deciding to do something like that. When you're so central to their defense, especially the defensive line, and you're one of the best defensive tackles in football, why would you have that kind of selfish act in your nature at that moment to go over there and think that you could take that on? I'm trying to figure out what the end game that he thought that end game was going to make sense by going over there unprovoked, in my opinion, and he just decided to casually walk over there to try to have some kind of frontier justice on the field. His reasoning and deciding to do that, we have not heard that reasoning, it's not going to make any sense to anybody.
What did you make of the game? And if you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, or you lose Micah Parsons in the offseason to Green Bay, were there some encouraging signs, starting with the quarterback, Dak Prescott?
Well, honestly, I thought Dak Prescott outplayed Jalen Hurts, and if CeeDee Lamb doesn't fumble that catch away on that last possession by the Dallas Cowboys, we're having a different conversation this morning. He was so efficient. He didn't get sacked. He did a great job handling the pressure. The running game helped him out as well. Dallas averaged 5.4 yards a carry until Miles Sanders had that fumble after having that great 49-yard run to put them in position in the red zone, and then he fumbles the ball away in the next possession. And once that happened, I said, I wonder if that's going to change exactly how Dallas is going to be able to operate, and it wind up doing that because you get those kind of opportunities. You can't have them go begging in the red zone. And I also wonder, why did it take until the second half and it took the Dallas Cowboys defensive players to tell Matt Eberflus, the defensive coordinator, unleash us, and then he decided to dial up pressure? You would think not having Micah Parsons as your pass rusher that you'd be able to have other guys get into the mix and do that. And once they did that in the second half, they did a great job of stymieing the Eagles' running game, but Saquon Barkley was not able to get off. They kept Jalen Hurts in the pocket. They got a sack on him as well. That game plan that initially was happening in the first half made no sense, that not having Micah Parsons, why do you think you get home with four people and any of those four, their names are not Micah Parsons? That made no sense to me until the second half of the game plan of Matt Eberflus, the defensive coordinator of the Cowboys.
Freddie, how encouraging was it to see the run game for the Dallas Cowboys, led by Javonte Williams? Thought he looked pretty solid, and it's safe to say that might have helped open up the offense a little bit, right, and made Dak a little bit more comfortable.
It definitely was going to make him more comfortable, and they stayed committed to the running game. And it's a lot easier to do that when you have to worry about Jalen Carter, who spit himself out of the game where you can run the ball up the middle and have that kind of success. But I honestly thought that even if he was there, they were going to commit to the running game because Brian Schottenheimer knows the Cowboys are going to be at their best, and it's going to help the quarterback and help the defense when you have that threat of a running game. And the more they're able to have that kind of success, 3 yards here, 4 yards there, 10 yards here, that 49-yard run there by Miles Sanders, and they're able to get Kevontae Turpin involved in the running game as well. It gives other teams to think about. And a big part of that was the fact that they were motioning away. The motion told them what the defense was going to do. We hadn't seen that from Mike McCarthy. And Brian Schottenheimer was like, look, you can't just be going, you can't just go out there and stay in the set position, give the defense a chance to know what you're going to do and where you're going to be. So that is something that if Dallas can operate that way offensively, it'll help out the quarterback of the running game and it'll keep the defense off the field from playing a lot of snaps.
All right, Freddie, let's roll to the regional teams of interest here, my friend. And I've been high on this Giants-Washington game. And I won't be shocked if the Giants go in there and flat out win the game. But I think they're going to make this close regardless. The point spread is 5.5. I think the Giants' defense is much improved. I think it's going to be a close game on Sunday at 1 o'clock. How about you?
I think it'll be a close game, but it's one thing to be a much-improved defense, but that guy on the other side, Jaden Daniels, will be a much-improved quarterback, too. He is going to be as close to being an elite quarterback in the National Football League, and having Terry McLaurin back and getting rid of that distraction, and you have Deebo Samuel Sr., who they got in the offseason. They believe their running game is going to be a little bit better. Austin Eckler and a committee of running backs, and they made some improvements on defense. So the Giants' defense better be up to snuff because there are no guarantees that your offense will be able to do that. And I think Russell Wilson will play a little bit better than people are expecting. And in a game like this, he better play a little bit better because the Giants defense wasn't bad last year, but you can't be a good defense. You're playing a lot of snaps. That means Russell Wilson has to go out there and he can't just be check down Charlie. When the big plays are going to be there, he has to make those big plays, but you got to make those throws in intermediate throws and the short throws. It can't just be a rhythm passing attack looking for the deep ball, but you miss those layups. Jaden Daniels does not miss layups, and he can hit you the deep ball. So I can't wait to see exactly if that Giants pass rush cannot get home against Jaden Daniels, then what are they going to do? Because you can't get home against him. That's going to be a long afternoon in D.C. on Sunday.
So you think Washington could just steamroll the Giants? Or you think the Giants could cover 5.5?
I think Washington beats them by 8. I think they wind up getting a late score in that ball game, and then the Giants will try to come back. It'll be close early because games early in the season usually are, because this is the first time that you're engaging a lot of tackling against an opponent where it's not just drills or control practices. So it's going to be a little slow early going, trying to find that rhythm offensively and defensively, no matter what team it is. But I just think the Commanders offense with Jaden Daniels is going to be that special, and that fear factor is going to be enough that maybe they'll make a big play or two against the Giants defense. And I don't think the Giants on the offense side of football will be able to combat that. That's why I think the Washington Commanders win this game by 8 to 10 points.
Freddie, who wins the big one Sunday night, Ravens or Bills?
I got the Ravens winning this one, and a lot of people look at this and say this could be a barometer for the season. If you think game one's going to be a barometer for the season, then you don't know anything about the National Football League. But I'm looking forward to this having a kind of a playoff feel, and after what happened last year when these two got together in Buffalo. Baltimore, for my money, they may have top to bottom the best roster in the National Football League, offensively and defensively, and even in special teams without Justin Tucker. They have that look of a team that could be a 13 or 14 win team. And I think after what happened last year against Buffalo and those expectations, and even Lamar Jackson said, we got to get this going. We have way too much talent to fall short and get in our own way. I think they find a way to win this game up in Buffalo and really get a good start to the season.
I couldn't agree more. I think they get the best roster, one of, if not the best roster in football. I've got the Ravens winning the Super Bowl, and I don't think that's far-fetched. I think that absolutely could happen. How about the Steelers and Aaron Rodgers at the New York Jets Sunday at 1 o'clock? What's going to happen there?
It's like a case of divorced parents getting together at the high school graduation and trying to make sure that everybody doesn't jump off and have a scene. That's what this feels like when you got the ex-Steelers quarterback and Justin Fields for the Jets and the ex-Jets quarterback and Aaron Rodgers for the Pittsburgh Steelers. This Jets defense, I think that front line, when you got McDonald the fourth and also Quinnen Williams and the pressure Aaron Glenn's going to bring to the table, I think that's going to take the Steelers out of what they want to do and put that kind of pressure on Aaron Rodgers. I think the running game will be there just enough. I think Justin Fields will make a play. The key thing for the Jets is who's going to be that Robin to the Batman that is Garrett Wilson. Because I believe that Breece Hall and Braylon Allen will run the ball effectively. The Steelers defense is pretty good, but that running game can be taxing against them from the Jets. But who's going to be that second guy wide receiver that has to sell to Garrett Wilson? Because Garrett Wilson is going to be double and triple team. So somebody else is going to have to step up. I said the Jets are going to win this game. I'm not going to back away from that. I said that a couple of weeks ago. I just think that Jets team is not going to let the ex-wife come into their house and say, this is still my house, and walk out of there to victory. Even though Pittsburgh's a 2.5-point favorite, I hate to do this to you, Roger, I think the Jets find a way to win this one in their home.
There you go. Freddie Coleman taking the Jets over Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. I like the analogy there, too. How about Mike Vrabel and the Patriots getting off to a 1-0 start with a win over the Las Vegas Raiders on Sunday.
This is a sneaky game because I think this could be one of the better games of the weekend that nobody's talking about. The Raiders are going to be improved. Ashton Gentry at running back, who's going to be terrific. They got Geno Smith at quarterback. Pete Carroll knows how to coach a team. That defense will be a little bit better led by Max Crosby. But this Patriots team, Drake May has something going on there. And I think Ramondre Stevenson can hold onto the football a little bit at the running back position. They may not have that thumper on the outside at wide receiver, but that doesn't mean that Drake May can't be that point guard and spread the ball around. I can see this game being like a 24-21, maybe a 24-20 kind of game. I think the Patriots wind up winning this game, but both of these teams are going to get better as the season goes along because I believe in those two coaches, and Pete Carroll on one side for the Raiders and Mike Vrabel for the Patriots. This is a sneaky game that I think we look back on this week and say, man, that was a pretty good game. I should have paid more attention to that game because I think both of these teams are going to keep improving as the year goes along.
Friday, before we let you go, what's another game that you think that we haven't mentioned that our listeners and, in your opinion, people should have their eyes on Sunday, week one here?
Well, I'll give you two. Lions and Packers, because Micah Parsons, his first game with the Green Bay Packers. And yeah. I'm trying to figure out why a lot of people aren't talking more about the Detroit Lions being a potential Super Bowl team, because there were two teams last year that won at least 15 games the regular season. Kansas City was one, and Detroit was the other. They had the best record in the NFC, and they know they can play with the Packers and beat the Packers. They've done it recently, and they won this division in the last 2 years. So that's one. And number two, the Buccaneers and the Falcons, mainly because my boy Harry Douglas played for the Falcons. He believes that this is going to be year. The Falcons are going to win the NFC South. He keeps talking about the quarterback, Michael Penix Jr. Here comes the gunslinger that he's ready to go out there and do some things. But Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers are not trying to hear that. That's a sneaky team, I believe, in the NFC that could cause a lot of problems because they're going to be better defensively, and that offense can be really special with a two-fisted attack, the way they can throw the ball and run the football. That's another game I got my eye on, that the Falcons believe they can win this division, but the Buccaneers have won this division for the last 4 years.
I picked Atlanta in week one. Tell Harry Douglas, Roger in Albany, taking the Falcons.
I will tell him, but I think you two are going to be crying in your beer on Monday when the Buccaneers win this ballgame.
I have a funny feeling you're right on that. Freddie, always a pleasure. We love having you every Friday on this show, and you're obviously beloved here in the 518 in the Capital Region. And we can't thank you enough for joining us here on ESPN Radio.
It's always one of my favorite parts of the week, my guys. I can't wait to talk again in 7 days, and have a good weekend, and we'll do it again then.
Sounds good. Thank you, Freddie. Appreciate you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Freddie Coleman, and you have your show at 3, Freddie on at 4. And here we go.
Football
NFL
Friday.
Week one, a lot of football on the Friday show. Hey, Big Board Sports now turning into hour number 3 on a football-filled Friday show. And, yeah, it's going to be a great weekend. And it's already started out great because the Dallas Cowboys, when I made my bet on DraftKings, they covered the spread. And that's all I needed. Cha-ching for Weiland as we try to make a lot of money here in the National Football League season. And nobody better to help us do that than Alex Caruso, sports betting analyst and featured on ESPN, big-time national guy to help us get through week one in the NFL season. Some parlays, some regional teams of interest. Which direction are we going? Can we have the Giants cover in Washington? Alex, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. I mean, Christmas was yesterday morning, and we continue on today. NFL, 4 out of 5 days, been waiting all summer. Like, what's really better than this, especially when you can bet on it?
It gets no better, and that's why I love having you on. You can have all the fantasy stuff in the world that you want. Give me the true betting line so I can make some money. I don't have to make money if my team won the fantasy league. I want to know if I won the game that week and can make some money. Can I make some money on the Giants? Alex, let's start there.
I think you can absolutely make some money on the Giants this week. I think that Russell Wilson is actually going to make a really big impact for this team. Tyrone Tracy is looking faster than ever. I mean, my favorite play in week one right now has got to be Malik Nabers, over 71.5 receiving yards. The Commanders had a bottom 5 pass defense last year. Nothing can contain them, and all reporters have been talking about all offseason is the connection between Wilson and Nabers. He should be healthy and playing for week one, and I'm taking that over any time against a team this bad.
Wow. So give me the Giants, maybe even to win the game outright. Could you see that happening?
I mean, winning the game outright is a tough one. I think they're definitely going to cover the spread, but winning outright is tough. I like them at the price, but this is a tough Washington team at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. And your spread right now, is it 5.5 for the Giants?
Exactly. Okay. I just don't see Washington winning by a full touchdown. I think this is going to be a 3 or 4 point game that Washington is going to win, but give me 5.5 all day on the G-men.
Yeah, baby. I'm in.
Alex, how about tonight? We've got a game on YouTube, right? Chargers Chiefs, the second annual game out in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And one of the plays on your Twitter I'm looking at right now that you like is Justin Herbert under the half interceptions. You think he goes clean and doesn't throw a pick tonight?
Yeah, I think it's my favorite play on the entire board right now at -130 on MGM. He threw an interception in just 3 of 17 regular season games last year. He was under in both games versus the Chiefs. All Jim Harbaugh, the head coach of the Chargers, talks about is taking care of the ball, especially against probably the best team in the league. I think that he's going to do it tonight. I mean, 50 of 75 quarterback starts under Jim Harbaugh have gone under this line. -130 is like 56%. It's 70% of quarterbacks have gone under Harbaugh. I like this play more than anything else today.
All right, Alex, how should I bet the Pittsburgh Steelers at the New York Jets on Sunday at 1 o'clock?
Oh, man, I mean, take the Jalen Warren overs. I mean, a lot of people like Caleb Johnson, they're drafting him in fantasy, but anything with Jalen Warren is where you should be going for the bets today, especially because he is the lead runner. Kenneth Gainwell is the only guy behind him. He's only coming in for pass-catching snaps, so any rushing over for Jalen Warren this week is where I'm leaning.
What do you think of Aaron Rodgers and the kind of season he's going to have? And what do you think from a betting standpoint you can see from Aaron Rodgers going to up against his former team?
I think that I don't think that Rodgers totally has the juice left. I think if I'm going to lean anything on the Steelers pass catching side, it would be DK Metcalf, because he's by far the number one receiver on that team. I think that he's going to have an underrated season. But with some of the other guys that Rodgers is throwing to compared to what he did last year for the Jets with much better weapons, I'm not that confident that he's going to have a really great year, and I thought the Jets were his best chance to win a Super Bowl.
You have the Jets winning this game?
I definitely think the Jets are going to win this game. I mean, I think that the Steelers' offense is going to come out a little bit cold, similar to the Jets' offense last year with Aaron Rodgers. I really like the run game scheme that they're going with for the Jets this year, and especially with Pittsburgh's inability to stop the run, especially with Breece Hall and Braylon Allen in the backfield. I think it's going to be a close game, like a 17-14 type game, but I think the Jets defense holds on.
How about last night's game, Cowboys-Eagles? I saw it. Was it really, and you said it on your Twitter, you should have gone 4-1 for some of your five. You had Ferguson over 3.5 receptions, Saquon over the 18.5 carries, Jalen Hurts under 18.5 completions, Javonte Williams the under on the 10.5 yard long rush, and Dak Prescott over 6.5 rushing yards. And at the end of the day, it went 1-4. What did you make of the tough one last night?
It was horrible. I mean, I took Jalen Hurts under 18.5 completions, and he went over that 18.5 line on 23 pass attempts. I mean, what can you do about that? Saquon Barkley, they just didn't feed him like they should have. I missed that by one. I mean, Javonte Williams had an 11-yard rush from the 12-yard line, got carried for half of it. More than anything, at this point in the season, you're just trying to stay composed and make sure that your reads were right. It was just a lot of bad luck. I can whine about it all I want, but at the end of the day, my reads were on point, and that's all I'm trying to do again tonight.
All right, how would you advise me to play the Sunday night game, the Baltimore Ravens at the Buffalo Bills? How can I make some money on that game?
Oh, I think there's two ways you can make money in that game. One, betting the Ravens. With Derrick Henry, they're a completely different team. Buffalo has some of the smallest linebackers in the NFL. That's why they got absolutely destroyed by the Ravens last year. Derrick Henry is probably going to run for another 100-plus yards in this game. He ran for almost 200 last time against them. I think the run game is the big difference for Baltimore because Buffalo can't stop it. I'm taking the Ravens on money line. I'm taking them on spread. And I'm taking every Derrick Henry rushing over I can handle.
I love it. I've got the Ravens winning the Super Bowl this year. So I'm big on
Super Bowl.
I
love it.
You love it?
I do love it. I mean, if Derrick Henry can stay healthy, he seems like he is the anomaly for not getting hurt, especially as an over 30-year-old running back. he is the key for this team this year, even more than Lamar. We know Lamar is going to get it done, but if Derrick Henry can stay healthy, I think they can make a deep run against any team in the AFC.
All right, how do you see the Packers and Lions playing out at the, in a 425 game in Green Bay?
Yeah, I mean, I have two words for you. Micah Parsons. I mean, this is still the youngest team in the league that just added Matthew Golden, and now they have Micah Parsons, who I think is the best player in all of football on defense. I think he's the difference in this game. The Lions have had notoriously a really horrible defense. The Packers are much improved. I think it's going to be a shootout, like a 34-28 type of game, but I think that Micah Parsons has a big sack for the win at the end.
Do you think New England can get off the out of the gate quickly here against the Raiders on Sunday?
I mean, I'm a Boston guy, so you're never going to hear me doubt my Patriots, but all I've been reading from every beat reporter out of Patriots camp has been Drake May. We think he's going to take a really big leap. I love him for fantasy. I love his rushing yards over, especially for week one. And I love the Patriots to win this game. Geno Smith for the Raiders has horrible dome and outdoor splits. This is going to be an outdoor game in Gillette. The weather might be okay, but I think the Patriots are going to find a way under Mike Vrabel to play a gritty game of football and win.
Alex Caruso, keep up the great work, man. Love having you on the show. Sports betting analyst, featured on ESPN. Big time national guy now. Keep up the great work, and let's make some money this weekend on week one.
Absolutely. Let's make some money. Make sure you're betting your Brian Thomas overs.
You got
there
it, my
go.
Friend.
All right, let's
Thank
do it.
You, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Take care. It's Alex Caruso with us here on
He's
Big
good.
Board Sports.